Thank you, Fabian. Going to shift gears a little bit now. Up till now, maybe. We've been talking about mainly agronomic soil testing, and my assignment is to take us into the world of environmental soil testing and talk about some of the commonalities, some of the differences, and some of the challenges we have in using soil testing for environmental purposes. One of the first ones I think we have to recognize is a very big difference when we're looking at soil testing from agronomic point of view versus environmental. Antonio just talked a lot about how we calibrate soil tests. We develop the relationship between the soil test and some measure of crop response. From that, we can develop these interpretation levels that we're all familiar with, the below optimum, optimum, above optimum, or low, medium, high, whatever you use. And that's how we do it for crop production. One of the things that sometimes happens, though, is we have to realize that when we do those calibrations, if you listened carefully to Antonio, and you can correct me, Antonio, if I'm wrong, but I don't think you said anything about any environmental measurements in any of that. And that's not part of the routine calibration correlation process. Our soil tests for agronomic purposes have been calibrated with crop response. A common assumption that people make, and I think it's an erroneous assumption, is that above optimum is polluting. Now, it's logical to think that, as we get higher, it's more likely that we're going to be polluting. But just based on what we know from our agronomic calibrations, there's absolutely nothing that tells us where that environmental problem might be. It may be clear down at the low end here, at the below optimum, for all we know, because that environmental or agronomic calibration didn't include any measures that affected the environment. So I think the first thing is not make that assumption. I think that's a common mistake that I hear people making. What we need are some kind of environmental calibrations where we're now calibrating our soil test against some environmental measurement like phosphorus concentration here in runoff. Once we have this kind of relationship, now we can start developing some interpretations. One of the first things I think just want to point out here, this is with malic 3 and phosphorus. This is the common agronomic critical level. We use 30 parts per million in Pennsylvania, and most of them are around that somewhere. And so that tells us that one piece of good news is that the agronomic levels are pretty low. They're pretty much at background levels as far as environmental. So that first concern I brought up, that maybe even we're high environmentally down where we're still responsive, doesn't seem to be the case. We're clear down here at the background. Our critical level is going to be out here somewhere for environmental. But then that brings us to the next question. Antonio just talked about how difficult it is to come up with a critical level from something that I always thought is pretty straightforward. You know, the curve goes up and flattens off, and where it flattens off is the critical level. Where do we draw the line in this data? You know, where are you going to make that point where you're going to say this is the critical level for this soil test for some kind of environmental purpose? It's a continuous curve. Becomes very, very much a value judgment. And, you know, we've gotten into this in Pennsylvania with discussions of where do we draw these lines. It becomes political and very much, like I say, a value judgment. First thing is, what criteria are we going to use to decide where to draw that? And that is probably the biggest argument. There are some standards out there. One that you hear used fairly often is a wastewater treatment plant discharge standards. People will say, well, if a sewage plant can discharge one part per million, we can use that, come over here to our curve and come down, and maybe that's how we set a critical level. Some of it's done that way. There are some water quality standards, a lot of debate over that, but maybe we can use water quality standards as a way to decide where to draw this line. Another one that gets used quite a bit is change point. This data illustrates it, actually not real well, but it does illustrate it. The dotted line here is just a split line model, where we fit two lines to the data, and where it changes from a shallow slope to a steeper slope, that's the point we call the critical level. That's where we know now we're going to get a higher environmental response once we pass that point. So we can use that as our critical level. There may be other ones out there. I think still the big challenge often is just deciding what criteria are we going to use. Some people, anything above zero, we have the zero tolerance people. Other people say, prove to me that this, 2 milligrams per liter is really hurting anything. Where do we draw that line? There are a lot of other factors that can influence this interpretation. I'm not going to show all of them, just to make the point. Just soils. Here's some data just showing the relationship between the soil test, dissolved P, for several different groups of soils, and we get a different calibration for the different groups of soils. So we're going to have to consider that. We may not be able just to come up with one line, one relationship that we can use. Even the cropping system. Here's one comparing cropped land versus grassland. You get two different calibrations. And we could probably stand here all day and come up with all kinds of different things that we need to worry about. The point is, we need to think about these things. What are the different factors that could influence how we're going to interpret these environmental tests? And how do we account for them in our testing program? Sampling, another big issue that's been talked about today. We're looking at environmental testing. We have a lot of issues with sampling we have to consider. Traditionally, for agronomic sampling, we use the plow depth, whatever that is, 6-8 inches, something like that. But when we get into stratification and no-till, perennial crops, those kind of things, then we know we have the stratification like we see over here. We're up there at the surface. Since we're not mixing anything, we get very high levels. It may drop down to very low levels even before we get very deep in the profile. When we're looking at this as an environmental test, particularly in this case, I'm going to talk about runoff a little bit, where all the runoff activity is happening right up here. So what's important? Is it that plow depth sample? For example, this Burke soil, the plow depth was 85 parts per million. Is that the number we need to worry about, or is it the 500 parts per million that's up here? It's pretty straightforward. I think it's going to be this 500 level up here is what's important. So can we use our traditional soil sampling? Are we going to have specialized soil sampling to account for where the particular loss is occurring? So we may have to do some shallow surface sampling for environmental purposes. So we may end up, a farmer may have to do several different types of samples. He may have to do a surface sample to use that to interpret the soil test level for runoff. He may have to take a plow depth sample for his agronomic. Maybe he needs to take some kind of profile sample if we're looking at leaching. So it may take three different kinds of samples. Alternatively, though, and this data illustrates that a little bit, this is just showing the calibration again, the Malic 3 versus dissolved P at different depths, 2.5, 5, and 15 centimeter depths. And first thing you see is there's different relationship with each depth. The second thing, and this surprised me a little, is that really, even as we go down through, the relationship isn't quite as good at 15, but it's not terrible, even at 15 centimeters. And so maybe there is some possibility here that we can develop some different calibrations for different depths. So maybe we can have a compromise. And soil testing, as we all know, is a whole host of compromises. It's got to be simple. It's got to be cheap. But it's got to give us some useful information. But we're always making compromises in soil testing. And this may be one that maybe we can use a deeper sample, similar to what we use for agronomic purposes, but we're going to have to calibrate differently. And that one worries me because there's a lot of data out there in the literature that is shallow samples, showing the relationship between shallow samples and runoff. But then many of us are using just those numbers with whatever sample we're taking, often this plow depth sample. And so I think this is one mistake we're already often making. Test methods. We have a lot of good agronomic methods. We have some methods that have been developed specifically for environmental purposes. Again, one of these compromise issues that comes up is can we use the agronomic test methods now for environmental purposes? We know in general that these environmental tests are probably better. That's why they were developed, because they were developed to give us a little better reading on the potential environmental impact. But if we're going to run a soil test, keep it cheap, practical, and so forth, can we use these agronomic tests to do that? Here's a set of data that illustrates sort of what we need to think about. This is showing three environmental tests, the iron oxide strip test, water-soluble P, and calcium chloride extractable P, all pretty good relationships with dissolved reactive P. These happen to be for leaching. So dissolved reactive P and leachate, pretty good relationships between these tests and the leaching of phosphorus. Over here is the malic 1P and the malic 3P. Not as good as we see with the environmental tests, but not bad either. So again, maybe it's one of those reasonable compromises that we have to make, that if we're willing to accept that it's not quite as good, we may be able to use the regular agronomic tests for environmental testing. Now, the sampling and this test method actually probably go together in making this decision. If we have to take a different sample, if we decide that, then we probably ought to use the better, more environmental test, because we're going to have a separate sample to analyze. But if we can do it all on one sample, then this becomes very important, because we'd like to be able to use the same extraction and the same test method also to get that information. A lot of these tests are pretty highly correlated, and that's very tempting for us to just look at these kind of correlations, say between iron oxide strip and malic 1, malic 3, that's pretty good. Water-soluble P, those are really good. But we've got to remember, and this is another one that we've done historically in soil testing, where we take an empirically correlated test, say the iron oxide strip is correlated to P, soluble P loss, and then we correlate that iron oxide test to another test. Remember, we're multiplying those correlation coefficients. And so we may have some pretty good correlations here, but when you multiply them together, it drops fairly dramatically. So just keep that in mind. I think it's a possibility. It's something we need to consider, but we need to make sure that we're doing it right. Another thing we have to consider is what mechanism, loss mechanism, we're worried about. We just talk about running, say, an environmental P test. Well, it may be a different test if we're worried about leaching versus worried about runoff. And this is just some data that illustrates that. Same set of soils, surface runoff. Here are the calibrations for leaching, subsurface drainage. Here's the calibration. They're not terribly different, but they are different. And so we may have to think about, we can't just necessarily say, well, we've got a soil test, 200 parts per million, that's the critical level. That may be okay for one, but maybe different critical level for a different mechanism. Over here's a different set of data that shows, in this case, pretty good. This is looking at overland flow, leaching, and the curves are very similar, and the critical levels, in this case using breakpoint, are pretty similar too. So it may not be a problem, but I think it's one of those things we have to be aware of, that it could be a problem, that we may not be able just to use the same test method and everything, same interpretations for leaching as we do runoff or other mechanisms we may be worried about. There are arguments made that we need to look beyond just running the soil test itself, getting that extractable level. I think we're all familiar with the work that's been done using P saturation, where we look at the amount of phosphorus relative to the capacity of the soil to hold phosphorus, usually represented by the extractable iron and aluminum. This is the original P saturation calculation from the Dutch. Uses oxalate extractable phosphorus, iron, and aluminum and iron, and very good relationship between the percent saturation and dissolved P and runoff. So that's another way we can look at to maybe improve things. Here again with this, though, it requires a different test, the oxalate extractable. So that brings us, I forgot one more thing in here before I go to the next thing. Where this really seems to work and give us a big advantage is where we have soils with a wide range of properties that we're trying to test with one test. So here's several different groups of soils showing, I had this up earlier, but it shows the malic 3 versus dissolved P, and we get a different line with the different types of soils. These soils have a wide range, a 4x range in sorption maximum. They have a very wide buffer slope going from 0.34 to 0.7, so we have a fairly wide range in properties of the soil that would affect the soluble P. When we calculate the p-saturation, though, it all falls together on one nice line. So I think this is where something like p-saturation really helps us out, where we have this wide range. We've looked at this with a bunch of soils in Pennsylvania and found, though, that there's a very high correlation between the soil test P and the PSAT. It really doesn't help us a whole lot. But our neighbors to the south, for example, in Maryland, they go from coastal plain soils to mountain soils, and they're trying to have one test that covers all of that. P-saturation is definitely an advantage in those situations. Now, what I thought I was going to say next a minute ago, again, p-oxalate extractable test is, you know, another test. Can we use our traditional test? Can we use malic 3, for example, phosphorus, iron, and aluminum, and iron to calculate the saturation ratio? Been a fair amount of data that's shown, yeah, we probably can. There's a pretty good relationship between the oxalate degree of p-saturation, the p-saturation ratio calculated from the malic 3. Here again, though, we need a different calibration, because the normal critical level that's been proposed for the oxalate extractable p-saturation is somewhere around 25%. And this particular data from Roy McGuire and Tom Sims shows that saturation number is about 6% calculated with malic 3. So they're highly correlated, but they're going to be different. And we've just gone through some EPA recommendations that maybe we got to go to P saturation, we ought to use 20%, but they didn't say what method. They didn't say it was malic, was it oxalate, or any of that. And so we got to be careful about that. It's highly correlated, but they're not the same. Last thing is how we use this, how we make recommendations, and this is, again, is not different from agronomics. We always say agronomically we need to use every piece of information we can to make a recommendation. But it's particularly important here, and I think this is a mistake that a lot of people try to make. We've got to realize when we look at a pollution problem, you need two things. You need a source of the pollutant, and you need a mechanism of transport of that nutrient. We could have a lot of phosphorus in this room. If there's no water running through here, it's not a problem. It's only when we have both that we have to have a problem. And that's the basis for things like the P index. Soil test, it only accounts for one source, the soil. Doesn't account for things like manure or fertilizer we may add. And it doesn't reflect anything about transport. In fact, all that data I've showed you up to this point, where I've showed you soil test versus some measure of environmental P loss, I probably should relabel those and say if transport occurs and if the soil is the primary source. Otherwise, those relationships, that's a true qualifier on those relationships. And that's why we really need to account for the other sources and the transport. When we're trying to make a decision, just looking at that soil test, and whether it's soil test P or P saturation, doesn't make any difference. We're only looking at one source. We're not looking at transport. We're not going to really be able to figure out what's going on there to make a decision and a recommendation. If we go to looking at the sources and the transport like we do in the P index, now we have the soil P, either soil test P or P saturation. We have the fertilizer, we have the manure, we have the different transport mechanisms. When we put that all together, we can do a pretty good job of making a good interpretation and recommendation. Just to illustrate that, here's that same data I've showed you several times this afternoon. The only difference now is that we've added some P, some fertilizer, swine slurry, poultry manure, all these points up here. This was a nice relationship before, 0.86, 0.8 R squared. When we put these in here, these added other sources, the whole relationship falls apart because we're only looking at one source with the soil. If we integrate the other sources and the soil test into the P index, now we get a nice relationship again. Now we're looking not at soil test P, but at P index, and we get it falling on a line. We have a pretty good relationship there that we can make an interpretation and a recommendation from. Looking at transport, here we have a situation, a hill slope, a little stream down here at the bottom. Here's the soil test levels, 78, 144, 177 going up the slope. We could look at P saturation if you'd rather use that, 9%, 17%, 21% going up the slope. So using soil test or P saturation, we would say that we should have the highest losses here next and next, but we had less than a kilogram per hectare here, about a kilogram per hectare here, and 8 kilograms per hectare. Oops. Now it moves when I hit the button. Down here, and the reason is that we don't, in just looking at the soil test, we didn't look at the runoff, the transport. We had 46 liters here, 92 liters here, 4,620 liters of runoff here. It's the hydrology of the site. Transport is what really determined whether there was a P loss in this case. So it just shows that soil test is important, but it's not, can't be the only thing we use in environmental testing. So just to summarize, I think soil testing can be used for both agronomic and environmental purposes, but we generally can't use our agronomic soil test directly for environmental purposes. At the very least, we're going to have to develop different calibrations and interpretations for those tests. And maybe we have to use alternative procedures specific to the environmental mechanism we're worried about. We may have to use those tests, but I think that in many cases we're going to be able to use agronomic tests, and I think to keep it practical so we can do it, that's something that's desired. We may not just use the raw soil test. We may do some calculations like P saturation, things like that, that can help us get a little more information, a little more useful relative to the particular loss we're looking at. And finally, this has to be all integrated together. We can't just use a soil test. We've got to look at the other sources. We've got to look at the mechanisms of transport if we really want to get the full value out of the environmental soil test. So with that, Fabian, if there's time, I'll be happy to answer a question.